Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you, Steve Vaughn also. And today, we're going to take a look at the fundamental issues that seem to divide the Church of Jesus Christ. And yes, there are minor issues. I would call them the mint, anise, and cumin issues relating to how much water to use in a baptism and these sorts of things that have sadly divided the church. And yet, in the process, as we are straining after the gnats, we wind up swallowing the camels. And we want to distinguish the camels from the gnats. And it seems to me that state worship is an important camel in our day. When I say state worship, I mean the emphasis upon the state as the savior, as that which is supposed to solve our problems for us. And Megan Basham has a good article on this in Daily Wire. She used to work for World Magazine. She writes an article on how the federal government used evangelical leaders to spread COVID propaganda to churches. And again, the battle between the state and the church, and the state and the individual when it came to Christian liberties, heated up big time during the COVID-19 years. And Megan Basham goes after this issue in this article for the Daily Wire. Her investigative article goes on and on. It's got to be like 3,000-4,000 words. But she includes the likes of N.T. Wright, Francis Collins, Wheaton College Dean Ed Stetzer, the Gospel Coalition's Joe Carter, Tim Keller, Pastor Rick Warren, Russell Moore from the Southern Baptist. They all lined up to sell the vaccine, Steve. Seems like They all lined up to take the state position on COVID-19. And it does seem like sides developed on what I would configure as a fairly substantial issue. Here, let me just give just a little bit of this. In September, Wheaton College Dean Ed Stetzer interviewed National Institutes of Health Director Francis Collins on his podcast, Church Leadership, about why Christians who want to obey Christ's command to love their neighbors should get the vaccine and avoid indulging in misinformation. Stetzer is also executive director of the Billy Graham Center, the editor-in-chief of Outreach Media Group. He was previously an editor in Christianity Today and executive director at Lifeway, et cetera, et cetera. Former mega church pastor Tim Keller's joint interview with Collins included a digression where the pair agreed that churches like John MacArthur's, which continued to meet in person despite COVID lockdowns, represented the bad and ugly of the good, bad, and ugly Christian responses to the virus. During Saddleback, Pastor Rick Warren's special broadcast with Francis Collins on behalf of Health and Human Services, he mentioned that he and Collins first met with both were speakers for the billionaires and heads of state who gathered annually in Switzerland for the World Economic Forum. These guys rubbing shoulders in the context of the World Economic Forum. Take note. They reconnected recently. Warren revealed at an off-the-record meeting between Collins and key faith leaders. Warren did not say, but one can make an educated guess as to who convened that meeting and for what purpose. Given the striking similarity of Collins' appearances alongside all these leading Christian lights, once again, Warren and Collins spent their interview jointly lamenting the unlovingness of Christians who question the efficacy of masks, specifically framing it as a matter of obedience to Jesus. Wearing a mask is the great commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. The best-selling author of The Purpose-Driven Life declared before going on to specifically argue that religious leaders have an obligation to convince religious people to accept the government's narratives about COVID-19. Collins, as everybody knows, Collins in favor of aborted fetal tissue use in the laboratory, a rabid pro-homosexual LGBT advocate. I don't know what he was doing with the Wuhan funding, but not necessarily the guy to be trusted. Question in this article, how did Collins overcome all this baggage to become the go-to expert for millions of Christians? With a little help from his friends who were happy to stand as his character witnesses, Keller, Warren, Wright, and Stetzer all publicly lauded Francis Collins as a godly brother. Which brings up the question in my mind, whose side are you on?
It's a great question. Great question.
Whose side is Rick Warren on? Whose side is Joe Carter on? Whose side is Russell Moore on? Francis Collins? It seems to me that there's a worldview difference between those that stand for life, stand against the sexual perversions of the day, and those who stand with Francis Collins. It seems to me that something's going on here. There's a state worship. There's an implicit trust in governments to solve our problems for us. There's this unwritten assumption that people are signing up for that makes a strong distinction between the faithful and the unfaithful in the war of the zeitgeist, and it's centered around the development of the all-powerful, all-knowing, all-saving state. And I just, it seems to me that these guys are giving way to statism.
I think that that's true. And one of the things that we need to get back to, one of the things we need to ask is, what is the proper biblical role of the different governments? We have the family, we have the church, we've got the civil government, we've got business. Where is this? What's the line? Who has jurisdiction in what? And what is each job? The state is not in the job of training families. That's the church's job. Fathers are supposed to be training children, not the government. We've God set up these divides in the Bible for a reason.
COVID-19 was a test for the church in 2020 and 2021, my friends. Did Jesus want his church shut down for a year and a half, according to state mandates? Perhaps not every country, but certainly some countries required the shutdown of the churches over a period of time. And some churches would shut down in compliance to state requirements over a period of a year to a year and a half. Is this the will of Christ, or is this the will of the civil magistrate that has nothing to do with Christ these days and will not bow a knee to Christ and is in rabid opposition to the living Christ and does not submit the knee to Christ in the area of sexual perversion and abortion? And yet it appears that there is a fair number of Christian leaders that are willing to kowtow to the state in these fundamental areas. And that, my friends, is fatal. Fatal. And represents the apostasy from the Christian church in the present day. This is Kevin Swanson. Be back in just a moment.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And we're back on the Generations radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you, Steve Vaughn also. And a question comes into our program. By the way, you can give us your questions, comments at host@generations.org. Somebody asked a question recently, should Christians participate in the convoy protests? And I want to take this up for the remainder of this segment. Suffice it to say that C.W. McCall was not justified in 1976, whenever it was, to crash the gate doing 98 over a toll issue. Let them truckers roll 10-4. I take the position C.W. McCall was not justified in the convoy. And some of you may not know what I'm talking about, but that was a popular song from the 1970s. And we're going to talk about anarchy in just a moment. But one of the questions is do these things work? Now, it's interesting also that New York City lifted its mandate for indoor businesses, dining and events when it came to requiring vaccinations. Also, Ottawa's largest school board just said it will be reinstating 146 employees who were let go because they were unvaccinated. It's one of many organizations that are now deciding what to do with thousands of workers put on unpaid leave. Ottawa School District Board passed a motion to rescind its mandatory vaccine requirement for employees and visitors. So did the convoy work? Well, actually, the cases peaked on January 5th, as we had projected in the Worldview in 5 Minutes last November, and new cases were in the mud by February 20th. So by the time the convoys really got going, COVID was pretty much over, at least this segment of it. The U.S. convoy got started about March 1st, a little late. But the first thing I would say is I think we need to watch our philosophy. And again, Christians always watch out for the worldview. The worldview retained by those that operate the organizations may not be in line with ours. They may or may not be in line. I'm not interpreting what was going on with the convoy. And my guess is there were many organizations involved. But you got to be careful. There's an anarchical edge that develops among some groups. And I will say that C.W. McCall's convoy had a bit of an anarchical edge to it, which is attractive sometimes. People don't like tyranny, so they resonate to the anarchical message. Are we forced to break the law, or is there some other way we can avoid wearing a mask and taking a vaccine? You follow me? I mean, it may be that breaking the law or shutting down a national economy or curtailing a national economy may not be the best way to avoid wearing the mask and taking a vaccine. So as Christians, we really do strive as much as is in us to live at peace with all men, while at the same time, we are pressing our God-given liberties and our liberties as established by the Constitution, by our respective governments, even as the Apostle Paul did in Philippi when he was arrested. He pressed his rights as a Roman citizen, and we have a right to do the same thing. But that doesn't allow for anarchy. And of course, anarchy plays off on tyranny, usually contributes to it, so it doesn't really do you any good. Now, when it comes to protests, it's really a matter of strategy. And I think we have to be careful not to get too bound up in debates over strategy. I mean, some brothers and sisters will do this, and some brothers and sisters would do that. We don't judge our brothers and sisters for choosing this route or that route. Some might be more effective than others. If the approach taken by another brother or sister is different than yours, and you believe that it's less effective than yours, leave that in the realm of adiaphora. Leave that in the realm of Christian liberty. That's all I'm saying. But one of the things that people have to understand, and I think this is very important for conservatives and pro-lifers and Christians, is that the leftists have a nefarious syndicate that's developed between the leftist activists and the leftist media. See, the leftist media has been bought and paid for by people who hate God. And they've got this weird little nefarious syndicate that's developed between the leftist activists that put on the little event down at the city courthouse and the media. So the media goes down and covers the event as a ruse, as a way in which they can press forward their agenda, which is a leftist agenda, which just happens to coordinate with the activists who are acting out the agenda at the city hall. So, friends, I think you just got to remember that the leftists get their agenda by revolution and blood on the streets and by a leftist media. They've been doing that for the last 100 years, so it shouldn't be anything of a surprise to us. If you contrast the Pride marches with Operation Rescue, contrast January 6th with Kent State, etc., I think you're going to find that, in general, the media takes the side of the leftists.
That is certainly the truth, because I mean, even when you take a look at what their voting record is, it's like 99.9% will vote with the left. So my question is where do you stand on like civil disobedience? You know, for like there were marches for civil rights for Black Americans back in the 60s. You know, the race riots, absolutely not. I mean, you don't want to go that route, but the marching protest, going to Washington, D.C. to say, hey, this is not right. Where do you stand on that? Because is the convoy in Canada and the convoy in the United States in line with the civil rights disobedience? I understand C.W. McCall's was all about the, you know, I can't drive 55. And so we're going to, you can't stop all of us. So we're all going to drive 98. And yeah, that I would agree that he's not right there. But what about like the protest marches, civil disobedience, sit-ins, things like that?
Well, you know, I don't believe it's wrong to air your opinion, and I think we should do that. I think we should air our opinions, and sometimes it's helpful to do it, you know, as a block, for example. So I think it's quite legitimate. It's not immoral. It's not wrong for a Christian to participate in a protest. Now, the question, of course, comes to be a little more controversial when we're shutting down a business in the process. You know, you're walking into private property, shutting down a private organization in process. That requires maybe a little bit more thought. Is that an appropriate thing to do? My recommendation is that you do what you can through the local magistrate. In other words, if there's a business that is involved in killing babies, do your best to shut it down. Now, I know there are organizations that will do their best to shut it down for the next half hour. But I think strategically, it would be better to shut it down for the next 48 years. You know, strategically, that would be a better thing to do rather than to force somebody who was taking an abortion to put it off for another 2 days. So I think it's all strategy, though. I mean, again, we got to be really careful. And I want to be careful. I don't anybody writing in saying you condemned us for doing this form of protest or that form of protest. I'm just simply saying apply wisdom as best as you can. And here's some wisdom that I think I can share with you, and that is that in general, protests in America have been very successful as long as it's a leftist protest. Why? Because of the fourth arm of government, and that is media. Media does have a tremendous amount of influence in America, and it has a lot of leftist influence. It tends to err towards the left, and it tends to support and cover the events, the protests that are operated by leftist organizations. And that's just the way it works. I think we just have to realize that. If you think that you can, you know, throw a little right-wing biblical protest down at the city hall and all of the leftist media is going to come down and cover it and talk about how wonderful you are and such, that's not going to happen. I'm sorry, it's just not going to happen. Remember, 7% of journalists are Republican. That is in 2013, down from 18% in 2002. You know, so your odds are even worse than they were back in the early 2000s. 7% of journalists are Republicans, down from 18% in 2002. That means the media is at least 400% more liberal than the national population. It's engineered that way, mostly by liberal arts colleges. Liberal arts is always liberal. Every Christian liberal arts college practically is a liberal. There's a few exceptions, but that's just the way it works. Friends, we can't be idiots here. We've lost the battle in education and media. Therefore, we're going to lose the battle in politics. Just step back and admit it. Let's get past the denial phase. We're losers when it comes to media and education. That's one reason why Generations has focused on these two areas for the last 20 years. And yes, we influence about 1,000 people or a couple thousand households, but we need another 10,000 organizations like Generations if we're going to make an impact nationally. But friends, the bottom line is the media is controlled by the left, and the leftist protesters are always in the pocket of the media. So just keep that in mind. As long as it's a 4 or 5 to 1 ratio of Democrats to Republicans amongst the journalistic media organizations in America, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. You're going to lose. Now, the liberal to conservative ratio in universities when it comes to university professors is 5 to 1. That's the Higher Education Research Institute at UCLA. And it's worse than it was in the early 1990s. It's getting worse and worse every year. Why? Because they've captured education. Because they've captured the media. You cannot win the political battles unless you win the media battle or the education battle. And that's why Generations has focused on education and media or journalism over these last 20 years. And we have our impact on a couple thousand families. But we need tens of thousands more ministries like ours if we're going to make an impact on the nation. We are up against a gigantic force, the zeitgeist, a spiritual force, unlike anything that the Christian church has ever faced in the history of the Christian church. Let's face it, the educational mammoth organization, the media organization is so structured and so powerful that we are just a drop in the bucket. It is a tiny David against a gigantic Goliath when it comes to to education and media. And now we're not backing away from it. I'm just saying we need more help here. We need a lot more help in this department. Now, the question I think people are grappling with is, how do you change public policy? So this is probably the more fundamental question. Now, of course, you're going to affect public policy at the point at which you can affect education and media. Are political figures really swayed by public opinion? Ultimately, they're swayed by their worldview, which is set by education and media. So media does have something of an influence on political figures. I'm convinced of it. But more fundamentally, the place they're educated probably has more of an influence. And that's why the liberal arts colleges, the Christian liberal arts colleges, have done so much damage to the future of this nation and have undermined a Christian world and life view over a period of the last 100 years. And if you go back to Harvard, over the period of 300 years. That's right. The corruption of the liberal arts college has been devastating because typically your political leaders and your religious leaders are educated in liberal arts colleges. And that's why liberal arts colleges are liberal. And that's why the majority of Wheaton College professors voted for Barack Obama. That's why we're going to continue to face these issues year in and year out. Now, marching in the streets may be cathartic, but does it really do much for liberty? That's my question. Marching in the streets can perhaps even nurture a little anarchy from time to time, but that's not going to help either. Now, what about standing outside abortion clinics and pleading with people not to kill their babies? I think that can be fruitful, and I've done that a number of times. Steve, I know you've been down there from time to time as well. I think it can be fruitful, especially if they become Christians. If people become Christians in the process, the law of God, you know, standing up and saying, don't murder your child, that's effectively preaching the law of God to people. And that might convict them of their sins and bring them to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. And I think from that perspective, you could make a really serious impact on the life of a pregnant mother.
Yeah. And, you know, just being always prepared to give an answer for the hope that lies within you to anyone who would ask you, and to do so with gentleness and respect, and to be ready in season and out of season to preach the gospel and the law of God to those who need to hear that. We're essentially to do what God calls us to do. He gives us the means. He takes care of the results. That's the God that we worship. He's the one who changes hearts, not us. But we need to be ready to give that hope that is in us because God has given us that hope.
And testify to your political leaders. Build relationships. Bring the word of God to bear in all of your various areas of influence. So, engage the conversations. I think that is important. Everywhere you go, try to expend some influence for the cause of Christ and his kingdom. I think we have to also remember, Steve, that the kingdom of Jesus Christ, it does not operate so much top down as it does from the inside out. Civil government's in place to take care of a few things that can take care of the worst murders, the abortionists, the axe murders, that kind of thing. But the kingdom of God is within you. He shall make his people willing in the day of his power. The kingdom of God works from the inside out. It transforms hearts and then begins to influence society. So let's keep those things in mind. Let's not put too much influence upon or too much weight upon the civil magistrate in all of this. Yet we need to take advantage of what opportunities we can to elect godly leaders. And let me get back to this, because I think one godly leader standing in the gap, whether it be Joseph, Esther, Daniel, whoever it is, can make a tremendous amount of influence upon that sphere of government and thereby protect our rights and perhaps keep Christians from being persecuted by the state. And so let's be sure that we're putting some weight behind godly candidates who want to step into the gap and serve in the civil magistrate. There are opportunities to do this, and I recommend that you provide a check of support, $200, $300, $500, $600, depending on what the campaign donation limits are, to a godly candidate. Doesn't have to be in your district, but just contribute something to a godly candidate who refuses to take bribes. I'm sorry, campaign donations from people who will benefit from public policy, but people who will stand for principle. People who stand for life, people who stand against sexual perversion, people who stand against the rising tyranny of the state. Support godly candidates. You can do that. You can do it every 2 years. in our form of government where we have a say in who governs. Well, that wraps up this edition of the Generations Broadcast. Would encourage you to our book, The Story of Freedom, which outlines our opportunities and responsibilities to continue the struggle for liberty in our generation. Again, this book is The Story of Freedom. It has a study guide that goes with it as well. All available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.